This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history podcast created by me, Professor Greg Jackson. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long. Steve Geller will join us at 5:45 for our Bet 365 triple option feature. I want to tell everybody a little after 4:20, Todd Walker, former LSU standout player, also played in the major leagues. You hear him now on the SEC Network, will join us to talk LSU-Arkansas, big series coming up this weekend. And thrilled to have Todd come on, knowing what's happening this weekend at 4:40. We'll have on with us from BetMGM tonight and Ryan Horvat. And want to try to pick Ryan's brain a little bit. Has there been movement a little bit post-NFL draft with teams maybe that people are putting a little bit of coin on? You see a little bit of a change, but, man, I think the big change may happen in the AFC. I think it's clear-cut in the NFC. If you got money, most of it's down on the Eagles. If secondary money, maybe the Rams. The AFC is a little bit more of a wide-open situation there with the Chiefs, the Bills. And you never really know kind of who comes out from the middle of the pack, but those two teams certainly getting a lot of play. Charlie, I know all of us here at WWL want to wish Cam Jordan the very best, and you said it on your Sports Flash. It's Cam Jordan Day in New Orleans, and the city council officially honored Cam with his own official day, so to speak, and just his commitment to what he's done away from the football field. A lot of times you don't hear it about what players do away from the game. And on his days off, a lot of times Cam would be at schools. If it was, you know, an upper elementary, a middle school, a high school, if he was going to a hospital to cheer somebody up, he doesn't have to do that. He chooses to do it. And we all know how great he's been out on the football field. Man, it's tough to get old in life because you're not quite the same out on the playing field and maybe in other professions. But, you know, Cam, one day, he's going to walk and have that bust in Pro Football's Hall of Fame.
Agreed.
He's that good of a player. But to have him on it today, I know all of us here, sports staff, news staff, everybody involved, wishes him all the blessings in the world because not a lot of guys will do that and commit themselves to kind of wrapping their arms around a community. And you've seen Cam Jordan do that.
So Cam Jordan Day, you know, the Saints had a thing titled that it's the New Orleans City Council honoring him for his quote unquote effect on the community, the local community, youth mentorship, charitable work, civic leadership, all this other great stuff. I love Cam. I mean, he's unbelievable. Just listening to him talk, he said that it was something passed down, the charitable work that he does in the community. It was something that was passed down from his parents. He watched his dad do it when he was a pro football player. He watched his mom do it. And, you know, he kind of learned from them. And he was asked specifically, I used the bite for the flash, you know, you don't have to take your time off during the season or during the offseason as well to spend it in the community. But he said it's just part of his routine at this point. And he loves the impact that he makes in New Orleans. And it's obviously felt throughout the community. He's fantastic on the field. As you mentioned, Mike, he's a Pro Football Hall of Famer in the very, very near future. But, you know, his work off the field deserves to be honored as well.
No question about it. And he's one funny dude, too. Man, he got stories.
Yeah,
he got some really good stories when you're there to hear him talk about it. So, man, congratulations, Cam. Well-deserved honor. Charlie, a little bit of football news. Jadeveon Clowney was cut loose by the Carolina Panthers today, 32 years old. Right now in his career, he's a mercenary. You know, hey, who's going to pay me to go give you a little bit of a pass rush? Last year, he had 5.5 sacks. And still showed he could play at a good level in the NFL. There's a spot somewhere for Jadeveon Clowney. But you looked at what they did in the draft. They draft a couple of young defensive ends. You could see they were moving away from Clowney, and he's still, he cost you a pretty good nickel to bring him in. But somebody is going to bring Jadeveon Clowney in, and you know what he can do. He can get up the field, and he can rush the quarterback.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, Mike, I mean, it's the Panthers doing their youth movement, right? Like, you draft Nick Swartzen in the second round, the edge from Texas A&M, who I know that we've talked about him as a prospect before and how we weren't as high as maybe some other folks were, but they get him in the second round. He wasn't a first-round pick. He falls to pick 51, where they snag him. And then principally, Umad Mielen, the edge from Ole Miss, at 77 in the third round. So they go back-to-back. And that was after they had made the decision to draft Tet McMillan at pick 8 instead of taking Jalen Walker like we all anticipated they would. But I think that Dan Morgan had a plan that he was going to address the defensive line, you know, still early in the class, but just not with that 8th overall selection. So there's a youth movement on this Panthers defense, and Jadeveon Clowney, I guess there just wasn't really a spot.
Yeah, and he'll go on to play. If he wants to play, there's a team that he'll – and I think he's been pretty good – and sort of handpicking where he thinks he can make the most of it. And he's going to get another payday in the NFL. Believe me, if he wants it, he'll get it. Charlie, last night we saw it for the first time in the NBA. A home team wins. And the Oklahoma City Thunder, man, they blew the doors open on Denver. The first game was, again, an amazing display of the Knicks' resilience hanging in there. And the Celtics, late with a 20-point lead, missed shot after shot after shot. But Oklahoma City finally gets a W on the board for the home team.
Mike, Steve and I were watching the end of that game in the studio after we got off air around 8 o'clock last night. And we were just feeling, oh, you know, the Celtics still have this in hand. They went on a cold streak unlike you've ever seen from the Boston Celtics. When I say a cold streak, they didn't make a shot in the fourth quarter for an 8-minute stretch, which allowed the Knicks to go on a 21-2 run. It felt like Boston was stuck at 86 points for like a decade. I don't know. It was unbelievable. And we'll share all these stats later on in the program because I got a bunch of them. But Boston being one of the first teams, if not the first team in the last 25 years, to blow 20-point leads in the postseason and back-to-back games. Like, they had them, Mike. I don't understand what happens to this team. And the final possession, listen, I get it's a championship team. Ryan Russillo had put this out there that, you know, the way they play when things get really, really tight and it kind of comes down to crunch time, you'd be shocked that this is a defending champion team. What was Jason Tatum doing in that last possession, Mike?
I have no idea. None.
It's like someone needs to tell Joe Mazzulla, the Celtics coach, that you can take a 2-pointer in a game. I don't know why they keep jacking up threes. They're not falling. So, you know, the Knicks go back to MSG with a 2-0 lead. If you would have told me that a couple days ago, Mike, I wouldn't have believed you for a second.
Man, will MSG be rocking?
Oh, yeah.
When they play in New York, Madison Square Garden, growing up, watching the Knicks and Willis Reed and Walt Frazier and Dave DeBuscher and all those great teams there. But, man, are the fans of the Knicks revved up and big time, and they deserve to have it at this stage with a 2-0 lead over the defending NBA champ, Boston Celtics. We'll be back with Todd Walker right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long and on our Oakwood Hard Jewelers Talk and Text line. Great baseball player for the LSU Tigers, went on to the major leagues. Now you can hear him and watch him on the SEC Network, Todd Walker. Todd, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
You're welcome. How's it going over there?
Doing great, Todd. I was telling this to Charlie that right after Coach Johnson got hired, you know, Jay came on the program, and there's some tremendous baseball programs here in the SEC. If it's at Tennessee or Florida, now with Texas entering the SEC and A&M. But the one team he has constantly talked about is Arkansas. And he brought up about the first time he goes to Fayetteville to play and to see, man, that looks like a dynamite baseball team. Now, Arkansas has not won a national title. They came close, a drop pop, so to speak, from winning it all. But I've never heard Jay Johnson talk about any team in the SEC like he's talked about Arkansas. So I'll get your take on it. What, in your opinion, makes Arkansas such a special team in the SEC in baseball?
I think number one is because DVH, Dave Van Horn's been there for 23 years, so he's seen it all. You know, when we asked him the question before last weekend when they played Texas, the last three series for Arkansas was Texas, at LSU, and Tennessee, and he didn't even blink. He's like, you know what? I mean, you know, we come out of this, you know, alive. We're the best team in the country. Well, they got one third of it done. They swept Texas, the number one team in the country, in Fayetteville. And the second thing I would say is in Fayetteville, it's a lot like the New York Yankees. Like, it's very knowledgeable fans, but they are ruthless, man. I mean, they will cut your throat. I mean, they're all about the baseball program there. Like, when I do games, if I make one little mistake on a stat or on a name, they're going to hear about it. And so that's just the fans that they are. They're passionate about that program. And to your point, yeah, they were one out away in 2018. They won 50 games in 2021 with Kevin Copps in that group. Won the first game of the Super Regional 21-4 or something crazy like that against NC State. Lost the next two by one run and did not make it to Omaha in 2021. So they've had some fantastic teams under Dave Van Horn. They just haven't been able to get it done. I think this is the year. Now, you can't predict the winner, but this is their best chance. I mean, they're just all around. I think they're the best team in the country. They've got a solid ace. They've got two backup starters that are fantastic. They got a bullpen that's as good as it gets. The offense is as good as it gets, and they play good defense. They're just a complete team.
Todd, a little bit on Zach Root, the left-hander who LSU will face tomorrow, and Cade Anderson pitches for LSU. But give us a little bit of a scouting report on Zach Root.
Well, based on his last start, he went 8 against Texas, struck out 11, 8 innings. I mean, you don't hear a whole lot of longevity out of starters anymore. So he's got the ability to last, give you some length in a baseball game. He's got a funky kind of delivery where he kind of separates the baseball from the glove, you know. And so there's a split second longer, I feel like, as a hitter. And not only that, when you're focused on the glove and where the pitcher is going to throw the baseball, he separates and then I think it's a distraction a little bit. So if you're looking at all that, you know, elbows and knees and everything coming at you, it's hard to really lock down on him. And in addition, I mean, he's just smart. He's good. He's accurate. He can get a lot of swing and misses, as we saw last week. And he's an ace. I mean, he's solidified that role as a starter on Friday night. We'll see how he reacts in Baton Rouge. But I'm telling you, the biggest deal when you talk about teams is home field advantage. It's a big-time advantage in college baseball. Like Arkansas right now in Fayetteville, they're 30-3. LSU at home within the SEC are 10-2. And 5-7 on the road. So it's a massive difference for LSU, whether they play in Baton Rouge or somewhere else. So I think the home field advantage, last year LSU went to Fayetteville and got swept. 2 years ago they played in Baton Rouge and LSU won 2-3. So the home field advantage that LSU has this weekend, I think, is going to be the difference.
So, Todd, I wanted to ask you, because, you know, Jay talked about this, that they've always had good pitching. It's been a program that's been known for good pitching over the years, and they've always played good defense. But the difference between some, you know, maybe prior teams and this team, Arkansas can swing the bat, man. I mean, they're number one in the SEC, both in conference play and out of conference play in batting average. The Aloy brothers are kind of the highlights. But I wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, the Arkansas offense, because I just watched them bludgeon Texas's pitching staff this past weekend. I know that's at Fayetteville and they're coming to the box this upcoming weekend, but it just seems like a, you know, as you mentioned, a complete team, and the offense is a big reason why.
Texas gave them a lot of help. I mean, Texas gave them 30. 3-0, 30 free passes, 22 walks, 8 hit by pitches. In addition, so what that tells you is they're patient and they're willing to let you self-implode if you're going to do it. But then the damage numbers are there. They've got 8 players in that lineup, including this new kid, Reese Robin, that just got in the lineup. He's only got 30 plate appearances. 8 of their players have an OPS, the combination of slugging percentage and on-base percentage, of over 1,000. So if you get 1.0 or above, that's elite. And they've got 8 guys in that lineup that can do that. So that kind of shows you the combination of power and patience, like walks and taking your time, but also the damage. They've got 8 of those guys. So offensively, yeah, they're as good as it gets. And what that means as a group is there's just nowhere to breathe. You know, I mean, there's no easy outs where you can just pump it down the middle and take a break. And so what ends up happening is the pitchers don't last as long, in a game, and it's an advantage for Arkansas. But, the on the flip side, Kane Anderson just feels like Paul Skeens in that he doesn't break. He just doesn't break. I mean, he's just mentally tough. And so that's what I'm interested to see, Cade Anderson versus this Arkansas offense on Friday night. That's the matchup.
Todd, I think one of the things we saw last weekend against A&M, LSU did well enough from a pitching standpoint to win the game. But, man, the hitting, and we see this from every team basically in college baseball and in the major leagues. There's a high and there's a low. Some inconsistent moments in the hitting part. I got a neighbor of mine and he's constantly in my ear about this. They hit these home runs, nobody's on base. Well, okay, I can't do anything about that. But that is something that we've seen from this LSU team, a little bit of inconsistency over the past couple weeks from a hitting standpoint.
You're going to see that and back to the home and road deal. Like, they hit way better in Baton Rouge than they do on the road. Remember a few weeks ago, they went to Auburn. Nobody hit the ball all weekend except for Derek Curiel. And so, but when they're at home, they're a better hitting club. They just play better. And that's not only LSU, that's most of the teams in the SEC. So again, that's the advantage this weekend. I think you'll see them swing the bats a lot better at home. They've got Jared Jones. It'll be interesting to see where Jay Johnson puts Jared. Cause remember, they let him off in the game Sunday against A&M, I believe. And that's just to see more fastballs. The theory is, if you're the leadoff hitter, you're going to get 30 or 40 more at-bats than everybody else. So you want your best hitter to get those at-bats. But we're not dealing with a long period of time. So I think for a Jay, it's to get Jared Jones more fastballs, because you're not going to really dance around the zone to the leadoff hitter. You're going to eventually have to attack him. And so I think that's the deal there. So it'll be interesting to see how he lines them up this weekend. But I don't have a problem with him moving Derek Curiel around. I think he can handle any spot. It's a little weird to see him in the four hole because he doesn't hit that many home runs, but he still can handle the bat. So you don't have to have a Barry Bonds in the four spot, to generate runs. But it'll be interesting to see how he lines them up. But the two lefty starters for Arkansas, LSU takes a step back against left-handed pitching because Derek Curiel is 110 points lower against left-handed pitching than he is right. Derek Dickinson doesn't hit lefties as well. But they do get Ethan Frye in the lineup, against a left-handed pitcher. So that's an advantage. But it'll be interesting to see how they handle these left-handed starters for Arkansas because Vital Shees, the third starter, is lefty. And, oh, by the way, Gage Wood, who they just got back, struck out 9 in 4 innings. So of the 12 outs, he struck out 9. So Gage Wood is back in full force. He just hadn't got his pitch count up yet, but he's nasty as a right-handed. He's be their number 2 this weekend.
The emergence of Anthony Ianson, the co-SEC pitcher of the week this past weekend, after going all 9 a complete game, gave up 1 run, 3 hits, 14 strikeouts in that matchup against Texas A&M, the only game that LSU picked up in College Station this past weekend. It feels like it's been about a month and a half now of him just putting up stellar performance after stellar performance from that 2-hole behind Cade Anderson, Todd.
I think he's felt more comfortable. Jay Johnson told me, he goes, he's the one guy that I'm going to let work through trouble because I know he can come out of it most of the time. And when he does, he's dynamic. And so I think because of that, you're seeing less and less blow up innings from Anthony Ianson, and he's confident and he's comfortable. And he knows that Jay's not going to go hook him if he gets first and second in the fifth with nobody out, that kind of thing. He allows him to work through it. And so I think you're seeing a comfort level there that's benefited Anthony Ianson. And yeah, man, he can get some whiffs, man. He's so good at the swing and misses. So you're going to see a lot of that this weekend from both sides. I mean, Arkansas, and LSU both. If they're not leading the league, they're top five in strikeouts. I mean, they just get a lot of swing and misses. And that's with the offensive power that we talked about from Arkansas. They can still strike out. But I think it's more of a credit to the pitchers and the stuff that they have and the ability to back pitch, which means, you know, when the hitter's looking for a fastball, you throw the off speed.
Todd, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Man, always love when you come on. Great insights, and love watching you when you call a game, brother. You do a great job.
Thank you. Appreciate you guys.
Thanks, Todd.
All righty. Todd Walker, former LSU great. Now you hear him on the SEC Network. When we come back from BetMGM tonight, be Ryan Horvath talking about the NFL, and also maybe we got a couple NBA questions to ask Ryan right here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long, and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, our Odyssey betting insider and host of BetMGM tonight, Ryan Horvath. Ryan, great to hear your voice. Thanks for coming on with us this afternoon.
Mike, I always love coming out with you guys, especially when we got so much action going on right now. Obviously, the Stanley Cup playoffs, the NBA playoffs, which have been excellent, but you know, I'm always thinking football all 12 months, all 365.
Hey, you're like me. I'll get you on that part. Ryan, before I ask you about how you feel the Saints did free agency and draft-wise, has there been any movement line-wise? Because I think it's sort of a clear cut in the NFC. The Eagles are who they are. And I think there's a couple of quarters being slung maybe at the Rams because of how you saw the Rams match up against the Eagles and come playoff time. I don't know what happens in the NFC North because they may beat each other up. And four teams now legit that are really good there. In the AFC, you know, there's that threesome at the tippy top with Buffalo, with Kansas City, with the Ravens. Has there been any movement with any of those teams or a team I didn't bring up that could make a run at this for 2025?
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up, man, because there's a couple different teams. So in the NFC North, I don't know that they could win the division year one, but I really like the Bears. I loved their draft. This year was all about, obviously, you know, making Caleb feel welcomed and getting him weapons to properly protect him and evaluate him. So they fix up the offensive line. They, you know, draft Colston Loveland. They'll figure out the run game. I think Caleb's going to be throwing the ball a lot. But, you know, you look at Jared Goff before Ben Johnson took over. He had a 48 QBR, and Sean McVay benched him for John Wolford at one point going into the playoffs. And I think Caleb Williams has all the tools. He just has to stop taking so many sacks. I don't think he's going to with Ben Johnson. And then I hear a lot of people that are worried about the defense. The defense, I think, is going to be fine. I think there was a lot of quit in the defense when Eberflus got fired, but I love all the coaching hires. So I like Chicago. I actually worry a little bit about Detroit because they have to replace both coordinators. And I just worry, like, last year felt like the year, 15 wins, home field advantage, and you get a rookie quarterback, you know, in a rebuilding team that a lot of people thought, you know, just got lucky playing a weaker schedule, and you get beat. So I worry a little bit about Detroit. I like Chicago, and of course, you know, I always like Green Bay. But the team I like, and I've kind of fallen in love with this offseason, and there's a lot of what-ifs. They're plus 150 right now to make the playoffs. And here's where there's been a little bit of line movement. I think they were plus 200 just a couple months ago, and then they went crazy in the offseason. So Jonathan Gannon got hired in Arizona to fix up the defense. The problem was they didn't have a whole lot of talent. But I've always really liked his concepts, man. And finally, you know, they went all in. So I love the draft. And I know you know about Walter Nolan, but that's what they needed help with, man. Their defense was 27th in EPA allowed per rush. So they got to fix up the run defense. I thought Will Johnson was a steal round two at pick 47. I think he might be the best corner in this draft. I know people are worried about the injury. I think that's more of a long-term, you know, worry. I think he's going to be fine this season. Jordan Birch, Cody Simon, Denzel Burke. And then in free agency, they signed Josh Sweat, Davis Gaither, Baron Browning. They signed Zay Jones, you know, for a nice little one-year deal. And I'm not worried about the offense. As long as, you know, Kyler stays healthy and they protect him, I think Arizona might be a playoff team. And if they're not, Jonathan Gannon might be gone, and I wonder what happens to Kyler Murray, because, you know, 2021 is the last time they made the playoffs, and they started off really hot. They were 7-0. They lost to Green Bay on Thursday Night Football. Kyler got hurt, and then they really got tripped up down the stretch. Remember, they lost to the Rams, and really the only reason they even got into the playoffs was, Mike, that was the first year they expanded the super wild card or whatever we were calling it. It was a Monday night on ESPN. They lost to the Rams, but I do like the Cardinals this year. Hopefully they don't make me look dumb, you know, saying this, because, you know, Kyler's been a roller coaster his entire career so far.
Man, he was a roller coaster last year. He really played well early, and then late, man, he faltered down the stretch. Your thoughts on the Saints, and I'll ask you about the draft first, and the second question would be, have they done enough to get themselves in contention with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? Four-time NFC South champ. Listen, I'll be honest, Ryan. I didn't think I'd live long enough to say that. But, man, I give the Bucs a lot of credit. They've drafted well. They evaluate talent really well. They got a little bit lucky with Baker Mayfield, but they made it work. And they're so well coached.
Yeah, I know. And that's what, you know, that division, man, Tampa, I really like what they did, but it's almost like they're kind of reloading for the future, too. I like Ibuka a lot, but you already have Chris Godwin. Maybe that means he's out next year. Baker Mayfield all of a sudden is a top five quarterback. And, you know, the defense, like you said, I mean, they don't have the most talent, but, man, they're tough. So I don't know if the Saints could compete this year. I think the team that has a shot at knocking out Tampa Bay from the top spot and win the division would be Atlanta. But, you know, everybody says that every year, but I do like Michael Penix. And I went back and watched every single game last year. And the issue was Kirk Cousins couldn't take snaps, remember, early on under center because he was just kind of shot. And so when they ran the ball with Bijan or Algier, everything was always out of the pistol. If they were going to throw the ball, everything was out of standard shotgun. So the play calling was so predictable. Now you have Penix, who I think people also forget, Mike, how good of an athlete he was. The problem is he got hurt so many times in Indiana behind a bad offensive line trying to make plays that he didn't leave the pocket a whole lot at Washington. I think he's going to, though. So I think Atlanta, and I like their draft. I know they got a little aggressive, but they had to fix up that pass rush. And they didn't do it last year because they got their quarterback. So I think Atlanta finishes first. I'd go Tampa as a wild card team. And I think the Saints might surprise people. You know, the win total sitting there at 6.5, I think, is very telling. I don't know if Spencer Rattler gets the first crack at quarterback. You know, if Tyler Shuck does, I mean, I feel like if Kellen drafted him, then that's going to be his guy. And I do think he's going to get starts, but I just don't know if it's right away. I like Jake Haener as a backup quarterback, but I don't think he's a starting NFL quarterback. I don't know that they did enough to compete this year, but I liked their draft because you got to get a tackle. You have to protect whoever your quarterback is. You know, maybe it's Tyler this year or next year. Maybe it's somebody else. That's the other thing. Like, if he doesn't work out, you could always get a quarterback next year in a loaded class. So I actually like what they did. I just don't know that they compete this year. So I'd probably stay away from the win total. I like the Kellen Moore hire. I just kind of want to see what he is as a head coach.
Brian, hopping a little bit to the NBA here, I want to throw some thoughts out here because, you know, what we saw last night with the Knicks stealing game two against the Celtics, back-to-back blown 20-point leads for Boston in Boston. But on BetMGM right now, the Celtics are still slight favorites in the series. And I know that they were better on the road this season, but heading into that game three, MSG is going to be rocking. I know that the guys on inside the NBA on TNT were saying that game three is actually a must win for the Knicks to go up 3-0 in that series and really try to have four chances to put away the Celtics. But at the same time, you know, I feel like Vegas is still leaning the Celtics despite getting off to this 0-2 start. They're still kind of siding with the defending champions.
Yeah, that's a great question right there, man. And so I was talking to this with me and my wife went to lunch today, an early little, you know, Mother's Day lunch, which shout out all the moms out there. Happy Mother's Day on Sunday. But I was trying to tell her about this, and she didn't care. So I'm glad that you asked so I could explain it to you, Charlie, and the audience, right? So if you wanted to bet the New York Knicks, the time has passed. I've never seen anything. I have seen something like it. But the Knicks have a ton of talent, and they built the roster to beat the Boston Celtics with three really good wing perimeter defenders. You know, Bridges, OG Anunoby, they're loaded at that position. I'm a Tibbs guy. I'm a Chicago Bulls fan. People don't like Tibbs because what's the knock? He runs his players into the ground. He makes them play defense, blah, blah, blah. And that's why he's on the hot seat. As crazy as it sounds, even if they beat Boston and they get eliminated in the Eastern Conference Finals, he might be fired. And if you listen to New York radio, they all want him gone. They wanted the same in Chicago. You're crazy. All the guy does is win. And what you need is a superstar. Why doesn't Tibbs win in the playoffs? Because he runs into LeBron every damn year in the Eastern Conference. So I still think he's a really good coach. And I think the reason that the Knicks are up 2-0, Charlie, on the Celtics right now, man, is because they play that tough defense. In Boston, this is the issue I have with today's NBA. I get that it's all analytics and it's telling you shoot the three-pointers. And I also get that Boston just 11 months ago won a championship doing the same thing. But when they're not falling and you're 15 of 60, how about going to the rim? If you're Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, you saw Tatum go to the rim last night and he had a poster dunk. And then the next play, he's shooting fadeaway jumpers again with the game on the line. Go to the rim. You're a superstar now. You've won a championship. You're going to get the call. What would Jordan do? What would Kobe do? You know, what would all the greats do? They would go to the cup and get fouled. So here's the thing, though. If you wanted to bet the Knicks, it's long gone. You could have had them plus 700. Now they're favored, minus 120. So today I had to bet the Boston Celtics to make a comeback. We saw them almost do it a couple years ago. Remember, the Heat were up 3-0 or 3-1 on them, and they forced it to a game seven. They just couldn't close the deal. I still don't trust the Knicks. The Celtics are 5.5-point favorites for whatever reason in MSG, where, like you said, the crowd's going to be bumping. And right now, Boston went from being minus 900, minus 950, to plus 125. It's like playing the stock market. You know, you had to pay $900 to win 100 2 days ago. Now, they're giving you the better team and the defending champs at plus 125. If any team's going to rally from down 2-0, I think it's them. I think Cleveland's in big trouble, especially with their injuries. I still think Boston beats New York in seven. And I think that bet's like plus 200 if you want to place that exact result. I still believe in the Celtics, but they got to knock off the three-point stuff.
And, yeah, I mean, I'm not a Celtics fan, Ryan. One of our coworkers is. But, you know, just watching them play, they would drive me nuts if I were a fan. Just because, like, you're 25 of 100 in this round shooting from three. I don't know why they keep jacking them up when they're not falling down. Joe Mazzulla needs to figure it out. You know, they're going to MSG, and we'll see if they can even up the series with two games on the road. My last question for you, though, Ryan, is kind of looking ahead. Are there any futures in the NBA playoffs that you're kind of targeting? You know, I know that OKC really had that nice rebound in game two against Denver, and they're heavy favorites in this round, but kind of looking a little bit more towards winning the West and winning the NBA finals.
Yeah. So, you know, I do like, I mean, OKC is the favorite. So again, like you kind of had to bet them before the season. I've been trying to make the case against them. You know, that they're a young team. Last year, everybody loved them and they fell in the second round. I worry, I love SGA, man, but I worry who's that second guy that could get buckets. Thing is, though, they play such good team defense, and they pass the ball. And, you know, you worry a little bit about Chet. I worry about him in these playoff games. Guy has a ton of confidence, but you saw it the other night when he bricked two free throws. I think they're probably the smart – I still think Boston wins it, as crazy as it sounds, man. And you guys will have to have me back on, and you could call me dumb because they're down 2-0 right now to the Knicks. But I think the best bet – the bet that I placed today as a future was Jason Tatum. You could bet finals MVP, which sounds crazy, but you could bet it a month ago and he was plus 280. And at the time I thought that was a good bet. Now it's like plus 850. I think that's a good bet. He's got to get it together, man. I mean, he's been terrible these last two games, but he's still a really good player. So your friend that's a Celtics fan, you know, probably down on Tatum right now. The thing about him is even when he has a bad shooting game, he still rebounds and facilitates. So I'd probably bet him to win finals MVP. But right now, the smart pick looks like, I mean, the price isn't good. I don't know who could beat OKC in a seven-game series. At first, I thought maybe the Nuggets, but they relied too much on Jokic to play 40-plus minutes. The Lakers were obviously a dud. They're eliminated. The Warriors, I would love to say, but, you know, we need Steph back. So if they could steal one of these next two games and get Steph back on the floor, I think they're probably the best value pick in the West.
Ryan, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Man, we'll get you back. Talk a lot more, and we'll talk even a little bit of baseball when we get you back, because that's starting to heat up, and I see the Pirates went adios to their skipper today.
Yep. Hey, anytime, especially this year, Mike, we could talk baseball anytime. My Cubs are actually good for one. So
hey, I didn't want to bring it up.
Yeah, enjoy Kyle Tucker. I'm not salty as an Astros fan or anything.
Hey, don't worry about it. The Pope is a big Cubs fan, so you got that going for you. Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, guys.
All righty.
Ryan Horvath from BetMGM tonight. We'll be back to finish it off here in our number one on Sports Talk on the Big 870 right after this break. Finishing up here in our number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. We come back at 520. Renee Nato from Crescent City Sports. We'll have him on to talk a little bit about some of the top prep football players in the region. Also, his take on the Saints draft right after this news break here on the Big 870 WWL.